This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. WikiLeaks has done it again. A new massive data dump of classified material has exposed multiple tools that the Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA, has created to infiltrate and spy on individuals through their smartphones and televisions. WikiLeaks said in its press release that the set of CIA documents, codenamed Vault 7, is the, quote, largest ever publication of confidential documents on the agency. The set of more than 8,000 documents is allegedly from the CIA's Center for Cyber Intelligence in Langley, Virginia. Well, what does this revelation of the CIA's arsenal of hacking tools mean for democracy and for privacy? My guest is Jenna McLaughlin. She's a reporter with The Intercept, covering surveillance and national security. She previously covered national security and foreign policy at Mother Jones Magazine as an editorial fellow. Welcome to the program, Jenna.
Thank you so much for having me.
So before we get into what the documents reveal, do you feel that these are authentic? Is that sort of not in question at all, that these are indeed actual documents from the CIA's?
I think at this point, we're fairly confident that these are accurate. I think that there's always the chance that maybe small parts of them might not be real. But I think at this point, people are pretty confident that they are. I've spoken with sources who told me on background that based on their experience with the agency, that these appear legitimate, including a diagram that was included of the different names of the separate parts of the agency. Those change every so often, and the names were accurate as of the last 3 years.
Right, and we're talking about 8,761 documents and files. It would be pretty difficult to simply sort of fabricate that much material. Right. So why is it called Vault 7? And is this the first, as far as you can tell, of more leaks?
I do believe that this is the first of more leaks. I believe that WikiLeaks has indicated that this is the first batch and that there would be more to come. And I've had indications from sources as well who believe that this is just the beginning, the tip of the iceberg. I'm not entirely sure why it's called Vault 7. I think WikiLeaks probably just came up with that name for it. They like to come up with flashy names.
Well, another term that has come up in these documents is weaponized so-called zero-day exploits. Let's talk about how the CIA, as far as we can tell through these documents, has ways of turning your own digital devices into spy cameras and microphones. What is a zero-day exploit?
Sure. So a zero-day is sort of a fancy name for a security flaw in a digital device or a piece of software that the company is unaware of, so that they've had 0 days to fix that flaw. And usually if a researcher comes across this type of flaw, they have the opportunity to disclose it to the company. And then they go through a life cycle of finding a patch for that flaw, things like that. So if an agency discovers a zero day and doesn't disclose it, then they can continue to use it to infiltrate targets, essentially.
So what do we know now that the CIA is capable of, and how much of it was hinted at before? I mean, we've heard, for example, in the documentary Citizen 4, Edward Snowden makes sure that his cell phones and computers are locked away in other rooms, put into refrigerators. Sometimes people are engaged in the practice of covering up the cameras on their laptops and phones. What does this trove of documents tell us about how the CIA can actually spy on you using your own materials, your own phones?
Right. So like you mentioned, we're pretty well aware of what some of the rest of the agencies in the intelligence community are capable of, partly thanks to Edward Snowden. The NSA, we know, has a vast amount of abilities to break code and to spy on you with various devices, turning on your laptop computer, turning on the camera, turning on the microphone, things like that. I think that people usually tend to think of the NSA as more of the agency that does those sorts of things, but we forget that the CIA is the resident covert agency of our country in that it also has these capabilities, it maintains these capabilities for itself as well. So in terms of that, I think a lot of technologists that I've spoken with and national security experts don't find these capabilities particularly surprising, but they are certainly impressive. There are a large number of vulnerabilities that have not been patched yet for iPhones, Androids, very recent versions. And that's no easy task. I mean, there are companies that are devoted to finding the latest zero day in an iPhone so that law enforcement can use that capability to break into phones, such as in San Bernardino last year. And, you know, it takes them months to crack the latest version of iOS. So they're certainly impressive capabilities.
I understand that the government, at least under Obama, was expecting agencies like the CIA to inform vendors and companies like Apple that makes iPhones of ways in which they can improve the security of their products. So they actually find holes in the security that they're supposed to inform these companies. Does this set of documents tell you that the CIA has not done so?
Sure. So that's a little bit more complicated, but it's certainly a concern of many people and remains one that these agencies aren't informing companies when there's a vulnerability in a product that a large number of people use. So there's something called the Vulnerabilities Equities Process that was established in 2014, I believe, by Obama's White House, which is this process that we don't know too many details about. But it's meant to bring together a certain number of agencies with the White House, and they discuss whether or not it's most valuable to maintain that capability for the intelligence agencies, or whether it's better for the public to disclose it and let the company fix that flaw. And the process is meant to be trending towards disclosure. That's the ultimate goal. So when we see things like this, we realize that the CIA is holding on to a lot of these sort of weaponized capabilities, and they're not telling the companies about them or trying to help them improve their security with that.
So that they can actually use them.
Right, exactly. And I mean, some people would argue, you know, that's their job. They're meant to conduct espionage. They're meant to, you know, use these capabilities to find out what's going on with adversaries, things like that. So it's an interesting conversation to have.
Are these tools developed by the CIA, or are they a combination of sort of agency code and code that they've borrowed from hackers?
It's definitely a combination, and we saw that very clearly in this particular dump. So one of the charts that's in there is a very clear list of iOS exploits, and it describes where they came from. And some of them were developed by the CIA, but some of them were purchased by an outside company. Some of them were purchased by the NSA. Some of them were discovered by the FBI.
What do you mean by purchased? I mean, they're buying right. malware from hackers?
Absolutely. So there's actually an entire industry that's kind of dedicated to finding zero days. And some of those companies sell these things to the government. Sometimes they sell them to black markets. Sometimes they hunt for them to genuinely disclose them. So there actually is this entire industry people don't even really realize that kind of farm for these zero days.
You write in The Intercept about a couple of these tools. One is Shamoon. It's a computer virus, another one, Persistence Swamp Monkey. Can you tell us a little bit about what these tools are, just at least briefly, and what they do?
Sure. So several of those tools essentially allow the attacker to access the very basic heart of the device. So when the attack can access the kernel level, or it has root level privileges, that essentially means that they can take over the device. So those are the most powerful sort of exploits that you'd want to access as the CIA. And also you mentioned Shamoon, which is actually a public virus that has been used in a whole bunch of other attacks in the past, including in Saudi Arabia. So one interesting thing that I saw when I was researching this in the documents is that CIA kind of trended towards using already public vulnerabilities because they thought that trying to develop something new and sophisticated like the NSA has, would actually lead people to be more likely to discover that they were the ones behind it and connect one attack with another attack so that they'd start to develop sort of a digital signature. So I thought that that was actually really interesting.
Hmm. Well, what do you mean by taking over a device? If the CIA wanted to target somebody, what, you know, would the person know that their device is is it just a quiet surveillance, or can the CIA actually simply render the device incapable of use?
If you have access to the kernel level, you can do it quietly. You can access whatever kind of information you want without the person ever really knowing. Mm-hmm. That there are some capabilities that agencies can turn on your laptop computer's camera and you don't even see the light go on. Things like that just aren't detectable. And if it's something like Shamoon, that kind of attack steals information and then has the aim at destroying it as well. But when the aim is purely espionage, you want to kind of get in and get out without the person ever really realizing that you were there. So it kind of depends on what the goal is.
As far as you can tell, is the CIA deploying these actively? I understand that there was one incident in 2012 in France that we know of. The CIA is, we sort of associate it with work abroad, with international spying. The FBI are more of the homegrown, local surveillance, domestic surveillance. So what do we know about how the CIA has used these tools already?
I think that that's something that we're really going to need to find out in the coming days and weeks. We might not be able to fully find out for sure without getting some inside sources who worked on those projects. That's going to be something that's held really tightly, and it might come out in future leaks. It might not. But because, like I said, the CIA used these capabilities that were oftentimes already public. I mean, one of them was a flaw that was discovered by a researcher who I contacted yesterday, and he said, you know, I had no idea that they used it. I published it on the open internet. Because these attacks are digital and it's so hard to attribute them to specific parties, you know, it might not be possible to fully prove that it was the CIA that did certain things.
So they're using tools that are available out there. So actually having the CIA take ownership of any targeting is also difficult. Now, we know of the sort of mass surveillance conducted by the NSA thanks to Edward Snowden, the sort of, you know, vacuuming up of information. But it seems as though this trove of material that WikiLeaks has released is the kind of thing that these spy agencies are more interested in using for individuals, spying on individuals. It's not sort of a mass blanket thing that you do, right?
Right. That's what it appears to be, at least. I haven't dug into every single document yet. But the capabilities that I've studied so far appear to be very targeted. Some of the documents about the cell phone hacks mention specifically that these are meant for high value targets, people that you want to know specifically and make sure you have access to all of their materials. I mean, some of these attacks, especially zero days, they're very expensive. They're in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So if you use something like that, you run the risk of exposing yourself, exposing the capability of the company, discovering it and fixing it so you can never use it again.
Hmm. Now, the way in which the CIA might be using these kinds of tools has people nervous. As I mentioned, people have suspected that, you know, people are nervous since the Edward Snowden revelations that the government is spying on us. So one of the things that a lot of folks have done is try to find communication methods that are end-to-end encrypted. Signal is a very popular one. People have used WhatsApp. Do we know anything about whether the CIA is capable of intercepting these sorts of encrypted communications?
Sure. So yesterday, I believe that this story kind of got very confused. Certain news outlets were reporting inaccurately that because of these documents, we've somehow discovered that the CIA can hack Signal and WhatsApp, etc. But that's certainly not the case. Actually, the press release that WikiLeaks put out mentions these applications, but in their actual dump, none of the documents mention those programs by name, in addition to the fact that there's no evidence that they hack the application specifically. There's evidence that the CIA can gain access to the phone itself. So if you have a hack that gives you access to the device, then once you're on, and you can read everything on the phone, unless there are specific protections beyond your initial lock screen.
I see.
So that's always going to be a concern. But Signal, things like that are still incredibly safe options, and I'd recommend them to anyone.
Right. So if someone does use these communication methods, your communication is safe as long as your device hasn't been taken over secretly, in which case whatever you see, the person controlling your phone would see as well.
Exactly. You've got it right.
What about smart televisions? This was kind of frightening as well. I mean, someone sitting there watching television. These days, smart TVs can, you know, have this similar internet connectivity that a smartphone does. Is the CIA also using their tools on TVs?
Well, they certainly appear capable, judging from the trove of documents. And I think that more and more people should be aware that any smart device that you have that has a microphone capability, that has an internet connection, runs this risk of being exposed, because not only are these devices kind of strange and unusual, things that you wouldn't expect to be hacked, and normal people, I'm sure that that's probably not the case anyway, but because these devices have such poor security in the first place, you know, the teenager down the block could hack your webcam, things like that, could hack your smart toaster, whatever it happens to be. So I think that that's kind of a more broad problem than people realize. But yeah, I mean, the CIA is capable of getting into that Samsung TV.
Is there any link, as far as you can tell, between what we've just found out from WikiLeaks and Donald Trump's bizarre allegations over the weekend that President Obama was wiretapping his phones at the Trump Tower, and that he, you know, basically has been spying on Trump? These huge allegations. We've discussed the sort of political aspects of them, but see any link between the two stories?
I honestly see no link at this point. I mean, there obviously are many things still to find out. We don't know who the source was. We don't know what their motivations were. But I don't necessarily anticipate there being big connections there.
And then the companies themselves that make these products that we use, that the CIA can intercept and turn into listening devices, are these companies, you think, going to take the material that WikiLeaks has exposed to heart? Can they actually, you know, use this in a construct, this data dump in a constructive way and improve the security of our devices?
You know, I think it's always possible, but I also have seen an incredible number of security disclosures from researchers saying, you know, this bad guy, that bad guy, the government could access this device for this, that, and that reason. And, you know, you don't see that much movement on it. So personally, I'm a bit of a pessimist in this area. I think that it's going to take a lot more, and it's actually really hard to update the security on these things. And it's going to need a lot more public pressure for that to happen. So I think that there's a chance that some things will change, but it's going to continue to be a problem.
And finally, Jenna, any thoughts on how you think these powers that these government agencies have might be even more dangerous weapons in the hands of someone like Donald Trump than they were under Obama? Also sort of kind of admitting the fact that these agencies are a little bit in a war with this administration right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that this is going to continue to be a really interesting dynamic between the intelligence community and our president. Clearly, there's some animosity there. There's some concern over what their relationship might look like. But I mean, these agencies really do have vast powers to perform these missions, especially the CIA. They have covert capabilities. And obviously, that involves Congress, things like that. But I think the thing to think about in light of these vast powers is that they haven't really changed so much, as they're still incredibly broad. They're as broad as they were under President Obama, and that just might be something we become more concerned about under the new president. We might think about things in a different light.
Jenna, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Is TheIntercept.com the best place to read your writings?
Yep, that's great.
We'll post a link to that from our website later today. Again, it's TheIntercept.com. Thanks so much, Jenna.
Thank you so much.
My guest is Jenna McLaughlin. She's a reporter with The Intercept, covering surveillance and national security. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletters, and you can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.